This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I want to thank the guys at America's Web Radio for allowing us to bring the truth of the Jewish state to the grassroots of the United States of America, the patriot conservatives, about the Jewish state, their fight for sovereignty and security, and their contributions to the world through medicine, agriculture, and business, and the vast amounts of humanitarian work they do. Thank you, America's Web Radio, for bringing this to the United States. I also want to say thank you to those, to the, I think it's 25 or 30 people that have sent chocolate bars in, Hershey's for Heroes. Thank you for sending those. Hershey's for Heroes is a program that you can find on Facebook, or you can email me at Michael A. Gonneau, G-A-N-O-E, at gmail.com, where Americans are sending chocolate bars with a note to an Israeli soldier saying thank you for defending the Jewish state with their name and the state that they're from. And it's amazing the length that people are willing to go to. I just got a box of Hershey's for Heroes from a lady out in Oklahoma that took the time not only put a note on, but to put a pink and blue bow on each chocolate bar. The pink, of course, for the young ladies, and the blue for the men. So I want to say thank you to everyone that that has contributed. I'll be headed to a base in the north next week where I'll be handing those out. I'm going to do some video, and we're going to post that on YouTube and then get that on Facebook, and also apply it to our email addresses to those who get updates about Insight to Israel. So thank you again to all those that contribute. Also, I want to say thank you to Jonathan Feldstein from Magen David Adom, or Heart to Heart, for all the hard work that he does in Israel's only blood and emergency service that is supplied all over the country, all over the Jewish state. Thank you, Jonathan, for all the hard work you do. We have a project coming up we're going to be working on that I'm going to share more with you about at a later date. So, moving forward, I am in the capital, eternal, and presently the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. Now, a lot of these folks out here, and I'm sitting here next to a gentleman by the name of Dan Mitchell. Chris Mitchell. Chris, I apologize. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You can chime in anytime you want. Chris, I apologize for that. I'm sitting here with Chris Mitchell from CBN, and I'm in here in their office in Jerusalem. It's amazing. Amazing the setup they have here and what you guys do, Chris. I apologize for getting your day wrong.
That's okay. No problem.
But I am very impressed by their office and the dedication, which, look, I don't know these folks very well. Chris, I don't know you that well, but I see it. And sometimes, as we know, actions speak louder than the thousand words you could tell me about your life. So I'm going to say thank you for taking the time.
It's great to be here.
And let me emphasize, I like to get on these little on this little soapbox once in a while. It's an insult. I'm saying this from Insight to Israel on my own. I am thankful for the for those in the United States that stand with Israel. I'm thankful that CBN stands with Israel. And I want to apologize right off the bat for those that, for, to the Jewish people, that our embassy is down in Tel Aviv. The only country in the world where our embassy is not in the capital. And I think the folks here are great. I don't know how they, I talk to some people about it, Chris, and like, they kind of take it in stride and, you know, but as an American, as a patriot, as a conservative, as a Christian, and as my tax dollars go, even though I haven't paid much in taxes this year simply because my pay's not that much, and that's okay, I'm making a point. But anyway, I want to say thank you to those who stand with Israel and who believe that this is the capital of the Jewish state.
You might be interested to know that Congressman Doug Lamborn was here just last week, and he
really.
Nikki's made a resolution in the Congress to actually move the embassy from Tel Aviv here to Jerusalem, and he's collected, I think, about 10,000 signatures for that, but also introduced legislation in the Congress.
Nice. Now, do you know any place where folks that are listening could go to be involved with this?
Well, I assume they could go to Congressman Lamborn's website.
And what state's he from?
He is from Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he's and he was part of what's called the Israel Allies Foundation, which brings together parliamentarians and legislators from around the world,
right,
who are supportive of Israel. And
nice.
That's a unique initiative in the last several years, and I think that's one of the things that has happened in the last several years is they've begun to combine, you know, pro-Israel legislators from parliaments from around the world,
yeah,
and get together and see how they can strategize and support Israel.
No, that's fantastic. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for telling me, thank you for chiming in on that, because it's very important. You
mm-hmm.
know that. And but not everybody gets that message, or, of course, you know, this is done without Americans knowing it, and they need to know from us here in
right.
Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for doing that. Now, you know, Chris, you you know, it's funny because when I walked in the door, and I didn't mean to assume, but I was thinking I'd see a guy more like my age. I'm 42.
Uh-huh.
And that's all right. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. I can't imagine the vast amount of experience that you have, because you've been here for how long?
13 years.
13 uh-huh. years. And your family's here.
My wife is here. When we came in August of 2000, we came with our three children. They were 16, 11, and 8 at the time.
Wow.
Now they're 30, 25, and 20, 21. So they've since moved away. And so my wife and I are in empty nest syndrome right now.
Nice, nice. So 13 years ago, wow. How old were you then?
I was 47, so that makes me 60 right now. And
you don't even look it.
Yeah?
You don't even look it. I would have never guessed that.
Maybe I don't act it either, but it's been an amazing experience. It's been an adventure for the last 13 years.
Wow. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, first of all, what did you do before you came to Israel?
Well, I was with CBN. I've been with CBN almost 25 years.
So wow.
I was a reporter.
That's longer than some folks been married.
That's true.
Wow.
Yeah, started in 1989. And so I was a reporter, correspondent for CBN for that time in the news department. I came first to Israel in 1996, fell in love with the city and the land.
It's amazing.
And I felt a sort of calling in 1997. You asked me, why would I stay here? I went to a service that had Bible teacher named Derek Prince was speaking.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And he was in 1948, he was here in Israel. He was leaving the British Army. He was talking to an elderly Jewish woman, and he said that he wanted to live in Jerusalem. And she said, Derek, you don't choose Jerusalem. Jerusalem chooses you.
Wow.
So when he said that, it felt like those words just pierced my heart.
Wow.
Wondering
wow.
if Jerusalem had chosen me and my wife and my children. 1998, the next year, my boss put out an email asking for volunteers to start a news bureau here in Jerusalem. I turned out to be the only one to volunteer.
I can't imagine not jumping on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not everybody has your mindset or mine.
Yeah, sure.
So I understand that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And with the I mean, you look. I've said this 1,000 times today, and I'll probably say it 1,000 more, because I've only been here a year,
uh-huh.
and it's amazing, amazing, amazing what goes on in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing the lies, blatant, outright, bold, emphatic lies that are told about this country. It's it flabbergasts me.
Yeah.
But during that time, so what did your wife think? And I understand, I agree with you, because we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a calling.
Right.
But what did your wife, like, I can't imagine what a woman would say, your wife, hey, honey, I'm thinking about going to Israel.
Well, it turned out that not only did I feel a calling to come here, but she did as well.
Yeah.
And she had her own experience when she felt like, even from a young child, that she was chosen for Jerusalem. So I don't think Liz would have come or been willing to stay unless she had felt something really deeper in
Absolutely.
Her heart.
Absolutely.
That this is the place where God wanted us to be.
Wow, absolutely. Wow, that's powerful. And you know, it's amazing because I'm thankful that... How long have you been married?
Coming up this month, 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you exceeded... Your marriage exceeded your employment.
That's right. Exactly. It took 10 years to get to CBN.
Wow. I want to say that I'm thankful mm-hmm. as... And I keep it in context and sharing, not airing.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for staying married
mm-hmm.
in a day when divorce is at a
right.
sad enough, uh-huh. at a shocking rate. And I'm thankful that I can look at you as someone I barely know, that I just met, and say, for being an example,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if I can put it that way.
Yeah, sure.
So your wife feels this same thing that you do, which is great.
Uh-huh.
So what was it like? You'd already been here to visit, but we both know to visit and live here.
Oh, two different things, exactly.
And the development that you have seen.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an amazing place to be. And as you said, that you see prophecy unfolding before your very eyes. I know we talked about this before. I just wanted to mention that... I wrote a book.
Oh, nice.
Dateline Jerusalem, and it's an eyewitness account of prophecies unfolding in the Middle East.
Dateline Jerusalem.
Which came out just a couple of weeks ago in the middle of September.
Chris Mitchell.
Published by Thomas Nelson. And
and they can buy this on...
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Dateline Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Chris Mitchell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you've seen this in your experience here, in your time here. I know you were talking about asking people... The Jewish people, why they came and how they came, and a lot of people feel like this is home. That's just one of the prophecies that are unfolding before our very eyes.
Oh.
Said, there's a divine migration. God is calling back his people from
Amazing.
The four corners of the world. And many of them have the same idea that this is, where else should I be? This is the land that God has for the Jewish people.
Yeah.
And not only are they coming back, but they're settling on the mountains of Israel. You know, the world calls it the West Bank, but if you go through Judea and Samaria, you'll find tens and hundreds of thousands of Jews who are fulfilling the prophetic call of the prophet Amos, the prophet Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Isaiah, of settling on God's promised land. And
yeah.
so, and that's the big conflict going on in the world today, is this battle between, is this prophetic fulfillment, or is this, you know, a future Palestinian state? And that's being played out in the world today. But the prophecies are just unfolding before our very eyes.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I've said this 1,000 times. This is not about land. This is about a Jewish presence,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the reality is, and folks don't want to deal with it, and I'm sorry for them, but we have an obligation, a conviction. We have a moral responsibility to tell the truth. And I say this not because I don't love people, but because I love people, I tell them the truth. There is no Allah. There's just not. There's no virgins waiting, okay? And I'm saying this as Michael Gannot, an insight to Israel. This is no reflection on Chris Mitchell, or I'll let him speak for himself. The Quran is a lie, okay? And Muhammad was not a prophet. Now, folks are scared to say that. But we have an ideology around the world that Israel is on the front lines of,
mm-hmm.
that is grasping. Right now, the Philippines, and I'm making my point, it's amazing that I see the Philippines right now. There's a large Filipino community here, and I get in and I've talked to a lot of these folks. Right now, there's a war going on in the Philippines. And you know what the Muslims there say? Let us have a little scratch of land to ourselves. And you guys can have the rest. That's what they're saying here.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's what they've always said. Let us have a little piece of land. Of course, we know down in the Gaza, 60% of the electric and water in the Gaza comes from the generosity, the love, the compassion of the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm correct on those numbers.
Yeah, pretty sure.
So my point being is, this is what the ideology says. Just give us a little bit, because in the end, they will want it all.
Mm-hmm.
And they're seeking that, and they're winning. I don't say that to as a negativity. I don't say that to discourage, because it should only encourage us that we see not only prophecies fulfilled on one side, but, you know, it plays out in the movies. You always have good and evil, black and white, the good guy, the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And Islam is the exact, the mirror opposite of Judaism and Christianity. And it's amazing to see Judea and Samaria, I call it the left bank, and those folks out there, they're the fighters. They are fighters. And some of their children turn out, I've gotten video with some of these kids, they turn out to be they're like hardcore, we have to defend our lives. So anyway, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent on Judea and Samaria, but I think it needs to be emphasized to people.
Well, I think one thing people need to understand, and that's one thing I put in the book as well, is understanding some of the basic principles of Islam, and one of them being that they look at the world as either the house of war or the house of peace.
Right.
The house of peace being that part of the world that is subjugated to Islam, and that would include probably nations like Saudi Arabia. But the house of war is that part of the world where has yet to submit itself to Islam.
Right.
And so there's this tension within many Muslims, not all, who feel like their obligation, their religious duty, is to subjugate the house of war to the house of peace. And the house of war would be the United States. It would be Israel.
Right.
It would be Western powers that are part of the Western civilization.
Yeah.
We talked to an Iranian expert, just the other day, Menashe Emir, who said that the Iranian goal is to, first of all, destroy Israel, because that represents Judaism. And they believe Christianity was based on Judaism. So their first goal is to destroy Israel. Their second goal is to destroy Western civilization, or what they look on as Christianity. Now, this is something that people may not understand. They may know the what of what's happening in the world today. The what is Iran's nuclear program, and what is the world going to do about it? But the why behind the what is this ideology and theology by Muslims, whether it's Shiite Islam or many times Sunni Islam.
Right, right. You know, and that's the thing, because people aren't aware of the fact that there are those, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I will not claim to be an expert, but I have read a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're Sunni and Shia.
Sure.
One believes in there has to be world domination for the mom to come back.
Mm-hmm.
The other believes, and whether that's violent or not, and the other believes that they have to create chaos in order for the imam to come back, and Islam will then dominate and to quell that chaos and bring peace. Mm-hmm. And look, people don't realize, especially in the United States, and why Europe is still in denial. And I don't want to get off on Islam. I want to get back to your being here. But they don't realize that there's the financial sector of Islam. There's the dietary sector of Islam. There's the family principles of Islam, which is, and it's amazing to see, and especially what they teach here in the schools about Israel. That they have 8 or 10 children, and they outpopulate what they're doing in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the peaceful sides. These are the sides that now we're seeing in the United States that are educated, that get in the leftist media and say, this is not the true Islam, while yet that's cover or for the militant side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing when you think about it in terms as like a country, a single country that has all of the financial, religious sectors, but then they have that militant arm, which defends the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And in layman's terms, I think that when people, especially in the States, with what we're about to deal with coming up very soon, when it comes to the infiltration of Islam in the U.S., they need to have that clear understanding that the violent side is just the militant arm that defends everything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, back to, so you came here with your wife, and now what'd your children think? Daddy, let's go to the Western Wall. I mean, how is this like for them as young?
Well, it was different for each one of them. Our 16-year-old boy at the time didn't want to come.
At 16, you know, it's a whole big change.
It's a big change. He had a girlfriend. He had all his buddies back in the United States. And he told me that the worst day of his life, and he wrote this in an application to a college, was the day that I came to him after school and told him we're going to Israel. But after his experiences here, the friends that he made, then he said that the hardest day of his life was going to be leaving.
Wow.
Because he made a lot of friends here. He had a lot of experiences he never would have had back in the United States. Our middle daughter probably acclimated the quickest. She was 11 at the time.
As middle children.
Yeah.
It's always...
So she made the change quite quickly. I think our youngest daughter had the hardest time. She was 8. And when we came, just 5 weeks after we arrived, the Intifada began, which consisted of 3 to 4 years.
Now, do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
Explain for the listeners what the Intifada...
Intifada was something that began in September of 2000. It was a Palestinian uprising against Israel, and it was marked by suicide attacks, terror attacks, shootings, bus bombings for a good 3 years. It started in September of 2000. Some people say that the end of it might have been when Yasser Arafat died about 4 years later. But it was marked by suicide attacks that were in earshot. You could hear the explosions.
Wow.
They were close to our children's school. They were close to home. They were close to work. So it was an extraordinarily difficult time for many people here in Israel at the time. You just didn't know what could happen and when. And so that was hard for our youngest, for all of our children, but particularly, I think, our youngest daughter. I remember an experience of praying with her as she's going to going to sleep at bedtime and hearing and seeing helicopter gunships, on their way to defend Israel. So that was, and she kept asking at times, Daddy, when are we going home? And
wow.
So that was a little difficult for
her.
But they all did make the change, and for all of them, it was an extraordinary experience for them at a young age.
Yeah. Wow. I can't even imagine. I mean, as an American, look, I've never had to sacrifice anything in my life, ever. Yeah, I've been through some tough times.
Mm-hmm.
But to go through that and to wonder, and this is a daily thing with these people, with the Jewish people mm-hmm. that live here. This is not, you went through that time, but still, we don't know. Just like the recent capture of the Iranian businessman.
Exactly, yeah.
That came
mm-hmm.
here. You don't know. In the States, we're separated by two oceans. We become politically correct. We're allowing folks to come in and just do whatever they want. But I just can't fathom. When I talk, I was on a bus when I first came. And I love riding the bus. I love it. Because I, all over the country, I had a professor here tell me, Michael, if you want to know the Jewish people, you do three things. You ride the bus, which I do. Spend time with the military. And at 42, I can say that most of my friends are 25 and under.
Mm-hmm.
I love these guys and girls. They're the best. And you go to the Shuk, which is the mm-hmm. open-air market,
exactly.
But I talked to this girl on the bus. She was actually worked on the Gaza border at a checkpoint. And it killed me. It killed me to hear it out of this girl's mouth. She goes, "Why would you come here? This is hell." She goes, "I would mm-hmm. trade places with you. Why would you come here?" Now, I don't get that. That's not a normal response mm-hmm. that I get out. But this girl told me that she had a friend in grammar school. And this girl was 18, 19, 20 years old. She had a friend in grammar school that... come in.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No, you're fine. Folks like some background noise. But,
you got your coffee.
Thank you, I appreciate it. This young lady told me that she had a friend in grammar school that was killed by a suicide bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another time when her mother and her sister, because they rode a certain bus, one of those buses was blown up.
Right.
And because of, thinking about her age, I'm sure that there were cell phones then, or maybe mm-hmm. they didn't have
one.
Oh,
yeah, they were.
But they couldn't get a hold of
Right. Sometimes when those bombs would go off, you couldn't get out on your cell phone because everybody was calling.
Right.
And it would just overwhelm the system, and so that was very difficult to communicate with each other. You know, I'm sure you've experienced this already. Israel, in many ways, is like a family. It's like a big family.
It's amazing.
And
amazing.
When these things would happen, it was like you knew somebody that knew somebody that was close to it, that was injured, bit it tragically, sometimes were killed during a terror attack. And so it's like everybody was connected in some way.
Right.
In a very tragic way. But that's the feeling here in Israel. Many times it is like a family, like a big family.
Yeah. You know, let me give a flip side of that to the story of that young lady. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after I came, and I was getting ready to do some work with the military. But I was on a beach in Tel Aviv, and I just like talk to folks. Mm-hmm. And started talking to this young lady, and me and a buddy of mine, he was from Scotland, and we were just sitting on the beach and talking to folks around us, and so got in depth with this one young lady, and she told me, she goes, Michael, I used to hate being here. She said, it's expensive, jobs are difficult, you know, I was born and raised here, and then I see what goes on in other mm-hmm. countries, and they don't have to live like this. Mm-hmm. She said, but I went to Europe, and they didn't want me. Now, there's reasons why she said that, because Europe is quickly becoming Eastern Europe, mm-hmm. anti-Semitic, Western Europe, Islamic. She said, I went to Africa, and I don't know, she didn't say where she went. She said, I just felt like they didn't want me there because of the passport.
Mm-hmm.
I went to parts of Asia, and they didn't want me. And then I realized, this is the best place for me to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the safest place for me to be. And it's amazing because, you know, I grew up in a Christian home, of course, and I didn't realize, and I believe as a father, as a husband, you know this, home is security, where you block mm-hmm. out the right. world. I had a Jewish man tell me one time, when I go home and lock the door, it's me and God. I can put on a facade for the rest of the world, and I can put on a show mm-hmm. and an act. But when I shut the door and lock it, it's me and God. And so it was, when I first came, it was, it solidified something in me, in my love for this country, and knowing that this young lady felt secure here,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in spite of whatever difficulties.
Right.
So.
No, that's it. They're coming home, and home is safe. Yeah.
Wow, it's... Mm-hmm. It's exciting talking to, even just briefly, someone that has been here much longer than I, because the joy, the excitement, every day is like, I wake up every morning and I, whether it's talking to my friends or I go to a meeting, and I'll say, wow, it's another beautiful day in the Jewish state. And to say Jewish state is just brings an elation. You know,
mm-hmm.
so I can't imagine how much more, you know, for someone like yourself that's been here for 13 years.
Well, it's a real privilege to be here, and I've felt that since I've come, and the wonder of it being here in Jerusalem and Israel has not waned in many ways. It's just an extraordinary place to be,
yeah.
to see prophecy unfolding right now, and. And then to be able to sort of walk where Jesus walked, to walk where the prophets walked, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. Listen, Chris, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. And I know I've kind of sidestepped and gotten off track, but that's okay, because I think we're getting some good stuff out there. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel. Thank you to everyone that's listening. We'll be right back. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot Conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel. Chris Mitchell, wow, wow. I can only say that about the first segment. That was great. And, you know, sometimes I like content. We like to get content in and stay. But sometimes it's good to get that meat out there. You know what I mean? For folks, when they're listening, it's like it draws their hearing and spurns their heart.
Yeah.
You know? And, look, there's a lot of people that are listening that want to come to Israel. And somewhere among this crowd, because, you know, I'm thankful. I want to thank God that, man, I've been blessed. The numbers on the radio show are growing. And Americans at the grassroots are listening. It's fantastic. And I get to have the best guests on. Thank you. And but if there is someone, and I emphasize this all the time, if there is someone, that's Jewish that's listening, and you feel that spurn, you feel that burn, how did they say it on the road to Emmaus?
It was burning in their hearts, yeah.
Did we not feel? Listen, you contact me. I'll raise the money. I'll do whatever it takes. There's a program somewhere where we can get you home. We'll get you a job. I don't make much money, but I'll pay you to clean my apartment, you know. If there's someone that's listening, we will get you home. If you look, I don't give much excuse for the Jewish folks. I hear this a lot, Chris, and it's a soapbox of mine. Let me emphasize, the Israelis do not need American money. They don't need it. They don't need it. In fact, the way it's becoming, with the dollar going downhill, and we're printing up so much money, and with the funding that we're giving to Islamic countries that will eventually, and are, turning on this country, and are turning on our own people in the United States as they infiltrate. You know how much money the Saudis fund Islamic groups in the United States, CARE, and some of these other folks? Unbelievable. And what do? We keep pumping money in their pocket through oil. You know, it's amazing, Chris, because I've been hearing this stuff for years, and I thought, oh, okay, so they're a Muslim country, and yeah, they oppress their women. They beat folks down and kill folks, and if you're a Christian, you're a marked man or woman, and you're done. But I just guess I never took it that seriously. And now that, even before I came here, and we're going to come back in, this is my little soapbox, it just, why didn't I say something years ago? Why are we giving our money to an ideology that loves it? They laugh at us. They laugh at us while they take our money. And then they dictate the price, and then they send their money to wherever they want. And it's amazing what I've learned, even before I came to Israel. It's amazing. And what these people are faced with. They are an amazing people in this country, Chris. Yeah,
extraordinary.
Amazing. Amazing. So you came, and you got a beautiful, and I want to say I'm thankful that you don't have some grand edifice, as I've seen some groups here have, that spend more time trying to raise money than doing outreach. Because when you got to have, and to me, a lot of that's ego. So I want to say thank you, Chris Mitchell, to CBN, for keeping it simple and the basic. Because my mother gives money to you and to Jay Sekulow, American Center for Law and Justice, and both of you guys do a great job. And I'm glad to know, I say this emphatically, it's good to know there's some conviction and principle involved with this, with the work here. That you don't need, you got the best equipment, and that's what you need to get the message out. But you don't need all the pomp and circumstance. That's fantastic.
Well, we try to keep it simple and mindful and thankful for all the support, like people like your mother. financially and prayerfully that that allow us to do what we do here.
It is a privilege.
Yeah, it is a privilege.
It's a blessing. Yeah. And, you know, as someone who worked in politics for many years, I raised money for a lot of politicians. Mainly I did congressional senatorial jobs. I've worked for on two presidential campaigns. And I and working at the grassroots, a whole different thing than working up there. Mm-hmm. I didn't work next to the candidate. And I'm glad for that, because I got to work and meet some of the best people that believe in our principles mm-hmm. of our country. And I'd see these folks give their time and their money, and then I'd see staffers waste money. I'd see campaigns blow money mm-hmm. on frivolity, stupidity, foolishness. And so it shows the difference between, yeah, okay, I'm not going to say folks don't believe in God or aren't Christian, but I will say that I'm thankful for a Christian organization that I see that is mindful in a heartfelt, principled way, mm-hmm. excuse me, and does right by folks.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks volumes in a day when it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
So, but you have a great studio here. Now, how did you, so you've been here for 13 years. Your children have grown now. Mm-hmm. Are they in the States?
They're in the States, all of them, yeah.
Okay. Do they come back and visit, Mom and Dad?
They plan to this Christmas.
Okay.
We have one of our...
usually it's folks going back to the United
States.
That's
true, yeah. And that's how we see them most of the time, is when we go back in the summertime for usually family vacation. But thankfully this Christmas, one of our children is planning to come this way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And how old did you say they were?
Well, right now they're 30, 25, and 21.
Wow.
And they're all grown up. And as one... our youngest child said just the other day on Instagram, he was talking to a friend, and she said, "Well, I guess we're adults now." And so they're living on their own and hopefully growing in what God has for them.
Yeah. Now, do you have grandchildren?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm looking forward to that because I hear they're wonderful.
Yeah. You know, look, that's hilarious. I just mm-hmm. caught the tail. Yeah, I mean, I'm a great uncle.
Oh, great.
I'm mm-hmm. a great uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me all the time, and this is going to be my next question to you, because I've been here a year, and I bought a one-way ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I, quite honestly, I went to church with my mother in West Virginia a few weeks before I left. And I told her in July, I came in October, I told her in July, I said, "This is tough for me to say, but you need to resolve yourself that I may never come back." Because I think we see the way the world's going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, it's not like I'm going to be here for 30 years. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, we don't know.
Right.
What life is going to bring,
mm-hmm.
what may change in the world. But I don't want to be misunderstood that I don't love my country, because mm-hmm. I've had some of the left in the United States take my words, as they always do, and misconstrue them. I'm not... people ask me if I'm homesick. Home is where the heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not homesick. I miss my family. It doesn't mean that I'm less in love with my country.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there are some very serious things that are going on. The work comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And if a man doesn't work, he doesn't eat.
Right.
So you gotta pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it like for you? Wow, 13 years. I mean, that's a long time.
It is a long time. You know what it's like? Somebody described it this way, and I thought this is a great way of putting it, is coming to Israel sort of like walking into a history book, and you're watching Israel's history unfold.
It's amazing.
It is. And for us, being, you know, reporting for CBN News, we've been able to be on the front lines of Israel's history for the last 13 years or so. What I feel, and that's what I wrote in the book too, is after seeing all these prophecies unfolding, and not only Jews returning to the land and settling on the mountains of Israel, but the gospel itself going around the world, where people now wonder, are we that close to fulfilling the Great Commission? And sort of connecting those dots, and what I've come up with is this idea, which I believe is what's happening in our time today, is that 2,000 years ago, all roads led to Rome, and 2,000 years later, all roads are leading to Jerusalem. And this is where history's final chapter is going to be written in this city.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I love when I get to... it's. And I think you've probably experienced this. again, at the grassroots level, a lot of Israelis, when I travel from the north, from the Golan to Eilat and east to west, at the grassroots level, these folks are trying to make their way. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to earn a living. They haven't got too much time, unless you're in the capital, to be thinking about foreigners. You know, mm-hmm. they know they're here. They know they come. But they don't see. And let me emphasize this to Americans, the people who stand with Israel. They are not able to see fully that they know the government is supposed to be their ally. And they see that waning. I've talked to Israelis and they say, we can't depend on the United States. And you can't. What you can depend on is the grassroots. Mm-hmm. That is that. And let me emphasize that if you, I believe in supporting our military. I've got an event that's going to be ongoing, just like Hershey's for Heroes, where I have Americans that are asking me for IDF t-shirts, and I'm going to do every Friday, because you know it's casual day mm-hmm. in the United States and businesses,
right.
IDF day.
Mm-hmm.
And folks are asking me for shirts for the IDF, so I'm sending them to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them, they're going to take pictures right. and post it on the page so I can show the soldiers. Americans love you. I've literally, Chris, had soldiers crying for me when I showed them my Facebook page when I first came and said, mm-hmm. we didn't know. We think the world hates us. I can't emphasize that enough, that because of mm-hmm. what they're not getting and what they're not hearing, they literally think, these kids, and I say that respectfully because they're not kids, they're adults in the military because mm-hmm. you have to serve right when you get out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
But to have soldiers that, I stopped one guy in the bus station and I said, thank you for your service to the country. And he was shocked. And he was shocked by this. Mm-hmm. So he found me in the bus station 20 minutes later. He said, I don't know who you are. And he said, I told my mother what you said, and she cried.
Hmm.
He was in Gabati, which works down on the Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me this big scar on his head. And so this comes back to my point. This comes back to the fact that what you're doing is so, as you know, but Americans need to know it. If you support Israel, mm-hmm. don't just go to things in Washington. Find us. Find CBN. Find Insight to Israel. Post things on our Facebook page. Post things on your Facebook page. Go to the IDF channel on YouTube. Go to the IDF Twitter. Go to the IDF, things like that. And show that you educate yourself as to why you support Israel. You know, a lot of people know, Chris, about the historical side
mm-hmm.
of Israel. I'm telling you, I've got a pastor right now in Charlotte. I'm getting ready to start doing Skype calls with their congregation. They didn't know that Israel led the way in technology, agriculture, and medicine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know about that Israel was the first country in 2005 in Haiti to do humanitarian work, even before the United States, which is closer. And they still have a hospital there. So, again, this comes back on what you guys do is immensely, immensely necessary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you've been here for 13 years. So now, where do you see yourself? Your children are grown up. They're gone. You and the wife hanging out, having a good time, got an anniversary coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you see yourself going from here? You're running the show here.
Right now, yes, I am, and see myself staying here. Like we've talked, it's a privilege to be here. It's an honor to be here, and I think that the times that we're looking at in the next several months, years, could get even more difficult for Israel. They could become more isolated. There's this prospect of some confrontation with Iran and its nuclear program. That's been simmering for years, and finally it could come to a confrontation. So history is going to get even more intense, I think,
right.
here in the Middle East.
Right.
To me, it's a privilege and an honor to be here and hopefully stay for what's coming.
Yeah. Look, you know what, Chris? I came to this conclusion last week. I hear all the time, pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I love about this? I kind of thought about this. You know what? When the peace of Jerusalem will come? When Israel's enemies are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there will never be peace as long as, and I say it emphatically, as long as Islam exists. There'll never be peace in the world because this is the predominant ideology. And so when I pray and I tell folks, pray that that aim will be sure, that that Israeli life will be saved from that, from their enemies that do not have a concern for life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Pray for a hedge to be around the soldiers when they're in the field of battle. Look, nobody wants war. But the fact remains is, and yes, this is a spiritual battle. We cannot get away from that. At the same time, we have a responsibility to stand up for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I pray that either folks will get right with God as far as the other side,
mm-hmm.
and maybe defect from the ranks,
mm-hmm.
and or that these soldiers are protected.
Right.
That every time that they have to go and defend, that God by divine providence will protect them. Anyway. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was going to say, you know,
yeah.
talking about the prayer for the peace of Jerusalem, in the last 10 years or so, I think that's something that has just been a wellspring of concern and Christians around the world praying for the peace of Jerusalem.
Right.
There's something that I know starts on the first Sunday of every October where Robert Stearns and his ministry, Eagle's Wings, has mobilized...
Great organization.
Yeah. Tens of thousands of churches and millions of Christians to pray and to be aware of the need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And to your point also about the grassroots supporting Israel, when we came here, and as we talked about the Intifada, this Palestinian uprising that sparked suicide attacks throughout Israel and especially in Jerusalem... The people that came the most during that time were Christian Zionists.
I heard about that.
Evangelical Christians. And so I think some Israelis at that time, for the first
Didn't they fill up the hotel rooms?
Sometimes they did. And they were the one group of people that came consistently during a very difficult time. And Israelis saw that. They understood that it was going to be the Christian evangelicals who stood by them during time of crisis.
You know, look, it's amazing. Because I've had Israelis tell me, and again, when you get out into in the country, they don't see the massive amounts of Christians that come here and spend money,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I've had folks say to me, "Are you sure you're not Jewish? You know the Old Testament better than a lot of Jewish people." And that makes me thankful. Man, I called my mother 1,000 times and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. How do you know all this? When I was little, my mother, for an hour, even when I didn't like it, would, and I'm making my point,
mm-hmm.
would read Torah and the patriarchs every night, mm-hmm. 5 nights a week. What? Really? Are your parents Jewish? Is your mother Jewish? No. Where does this come from?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because Israelis say that Christians are the biggest,
mm-hmm.
are more pro-Zionist, more pro-Israel than some of the Jews, shamefully, in the United States of America,
mm-hmm.
who make excuses that we need the diaspora all over the world. No, we need those that will bring their children, their greatness, their intelligence, their business savvy. Let their children serve honorably next to the Israeli children to defend this country. Let them come, mm-hmm. you know. Listen, I've had Jews in the United States, and I don't want to veer off here because I've had some of them say, well, why are you there? Why are you there? You're not Jewish. I'm standing where you ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come and stand in my place, I'm going to move to another place and stand where someone else ought to be. So I'm glad that you said that because I've even heard, I think it was John Hagee,
mm-hmm.
that, or either Mike Huckabee, that brought, during that time, Christians
right.
here
mm-hmm.
to bring business to so the businesses wouldn't be hurt here.
Right.
It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Wow. So let's talk about your staff.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have these folks, how many staff do you have? You have like six?
We have six full-time, three part-time.
Okay.
And they're a wonderful group of people.
They are. I love them. Well. I mean, they just have a great personality and spirit.
Uh-huh. And they some have been here for almost 25 years, some for maybe just a year. Some are coming as Americans who are working here on a work permit. So it's a combination, but all who love the Lord and all who feel called to report on what's happening here in Israel for such a time as this.
Yeah, nice, mm-hmm. nice. Now, how do you... Now, who's been here the longest is my question. Like, you've probably outlasted, what, 100 people?
Well, in terms of journalists, or...
Well, just you're being stationed here and running the... And
yeah, well, many people have come and gone. I think the advantage to be here a long time is to get some perspective and you get some history.
Right.
You understand the context of the situation in a deeper way, at least I hope I do, and you get some history, you see the history of Israel, and you see certain things, so you get a better understanding and a perspective on what's happening.
Yeah, I if I could use a term, and I was raised in a military family, my mm-hmm. father was a Green Beret, boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground, exactly. I think, you know, when you're here, you understand the situation a whole lot better. You can obviously feel the situation.
Yeah.
And when you have the boots on the ground, you can sort of take the land.
Yeah, it's... wow. So who's been the longest staff member that you've had here so far?
Well, Julie's been here the longest, and then Zippy's been here, you know, maybe 15 years or so.
Yeah.
And goes on down from there. But they, like I said, they all have this... conviction. They want to do, I think, what you want to do as well. They want to share the truth of what's happening here
yeah.
in Israel. And sometimes that's like swimming upstream in the media. And to hopefully present an accurate picture of what's happening and present from not only a biblical perspective,
right.
but to give some historical context to what's happening. I'll give you one example. You know, a lot of people just assume that the West Bank is Palestinian, to be a Palestinian state. But even if you take a look at it from international law perspective, it's disputed territory. It's
right.
not occupied territory. And if you look at it even deeper, it's not called the West Bank historically. It's called Judea and Samaria. This was a Jewish homeland for thousands of years. This is where Abraham was called by God. This is where the kingdom of David was, the kingdom of Solomon, and that's been proven, and it gets keep getting reinforced through the archaeological discoveries that are going on here.
That's why the Muslims are trying to destroy.
Yeah, in many ways, yeah.
Destroy the archaeological sites and
right.
the artifacts and things like
right.
that.
Right, we interviewed an archaeologist many years ago who described this as a sort of a cultural intifada, which is,
yeah.
intifada again is sort of a struggle, but destroying what they would say would be the Jewish historical roots here,
and that's where the word Palestinian came from.
Many times, yeah. Palestine was a word used by the Romans about 2,000 years ago, and so they adopted,
because they wanted to eradicate anything Jewish,
right? That
the whole history,
attempt, yeah.
And that's what at that time, that's what nation states did when they conquered their enemies.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to eradicate any kind of evidence those people even existed,
yeah.
which is a miracle. Knowing that this is the only people group in the world that kept their language, their religion,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. I can't emphasize that enough to the people listening. The Jewish people are the only people in the history. If I'm correct me if I'm wrong, because I submit myself to your tutelage, but this is the only people by miracle,
yeah,
as the hand of God, the unseen by divine providence, the unseen hand that moved
mm-hmm.
in their lives as they were... scattered to the four winds.
Yeah, and they kept their identity, their cultural heritage, and they came back. And so, no, I don't think there's any other historical example of a people that was scattered like that for 2,000 years and have been brought back by this unseen hand.
It's amazing. So, what has been your... Now, what has been the highlight of your experience here in 13 years?
covering many of the stories that we've been able to do.
Who have you gotten to talk to that's like, you know, we don't like to drop names, that's not what it's about, but, I mean, imagine the impact some of these folks have had on you that you've gotten to even meet.
We have talked to and interviewed before in the past Benjamin Netanyahu. I think in many ways he's a world-class statesman.
Yeah.
He faces a lot of political opposition here.
Not
going
to be him.
No, it's an extremely difficult position to be in, but I think he, like he has just to the speech to the United Nations recently, you know, told the world the truth about Iran's nuclear program. Other people like the former mayor of Ariel, his name is Ron Nachman. He was an extraordinary character.
Now, tell us where Ariel is.
Well, Ariel is in Samaria.
Where the university is.
Exactly. They have a university there. And he, talk about pioneers, you know, about 30 years ago, he went there when it was just a hilltop.
Wow.
And he set up a tent. And now if you go to Ariel, it's a city of about 20,000 inhabitants and Jews from the former Soviet Union and from around the world. And it's a thriving city. And they have made the desert bloom. They've eked out a thriving existence from what was a rocky hilltop many years ago.
Yeah.
So people like that, they are pioneers that have forged a vibrant new nation, you know, just like the prophet said would happen thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing when you think about it, because I've been out doing security work out in Judea. Mm-hmm. And these folks are amazing. When they go out on these hillsides, they have like sheep and things like that. This guy's got an old motorhome, mm-hmm. fixed it up on the inside, you know, living in these, I don't want to say shacks, they have electric and water. I'm not saying I couldn't. I've been in some tough countries and lived, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, but these folks to go out there mm-hmm. and live out there and claim what's theirs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know there's a land war going on here.
Yeah, and we talked to another person that we've talked to many times is David Rubin, the former mayor of Shiloh. Some people call it Shiloh. And that's the place where Joshua asked the tribes of Israel a question. He says, how long will it take before you take possession of the land the Lord your God has given to you? And that question is just as relevant today as it was in the time of Joshua,
yeah.
Thousands of years ago. and it's not as if they want to necessarily drive the Arab people out. They
right.
want to live with them. But
right.
they believe this is, they're fulfilling a prophetic promise thousands of years ago. This is where many of them feel deep in their hearts. This
yeah.
is what they've been called to do.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. It's amazing to see. The last sermon I heard when I came here,
mm-hmm.
I had Abraham. To the American Jews, especially if you wear a kippah,
mm-hmm.
Abraham sojourned in a land that he knew not by faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see.
Yeah.
The brave, the fortitude these folks have, the strength, the inward strength that they have is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What's the worst experience, real quick? I got 1 minute. What's the worst experience?
Well, the hardest experience perhaps.
Hardest, let me. Yeah, that's a good way.
Down in Tahrir Square during the so-called Arab Spring.
You were there.
Yeah, we were there, and there was a riot that happened, and that was probably the one experience and circumstance I wasn't sure I'd get out.
Wow.
And that was probably the hardest.
Wow.
That's what I sort of start the book, Dateline Jerusalem, with, that experience.
Dateline Jerusalem by Chris Mitchell. Look up the book. Chris, thank you. You're a great guy. We're going to come back and do another one.
Right.
We're going to get your staff involved.
All right.
All right?
Great.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Thank you to all those listening. God bless the United States of America, the patriot conservatives that stand for truth. And God bless Israel as she fights for sovereignty and security.